Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us in studio today is Ms. Jackie Shlongwane, the program manager of SABC2, who has 18 years' experience in broadcasting across all genres. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Malka. Glad to be here.
We're glad that you're here to give us a little bit more insight in terms of the world of media and particularly how it pertains to women. Now, starting off, your professional experience ranges from being a researcher, language advisor, a television program presenter, writer, production coordinator, production manager, producer, executive producer, project manager, and head of genre in the reversioning and repurposing unit. Now, as such, apart from that diverse array of different jobs and entire value chain within a system, you deal with issues which are effectively going to influence and change South African lives for the weeks, months, and years to come. Can you share with us a little bit of your responsibilities that come with being a program manager and having such a demanding career?
Yeah, absolutely. It's quite daunting when somebody actually goes through your history and a career because, you know, you come to a job every day and you do different things. And it's really been wonderful for me. I'm a program manager now for SABC2, as you've said. And it is such a exciting but very daunting kind of job because you actually realize the responsibility that you have. I'm tasked together with my team to curate content, to find content, to commission content that will deliver on public value because we are a public broadcaster. And as we know in South Africa, as I'm sure with the rest of the continent, we are faced with many, many challenges. And media is really an effective way of trying to address those challenges if content is curated properly and is produced properly and it's also is going to resonate with the audiences. So my job really, I mean, we're a full spectrum channel. We've got content for all ages from cradle to grave. We've got educational programs, we've got dramas, we've got documentaries, we've got entertainment shows. But what I really try to do together with my team and the content team is to ensure that whatever the genre that we are going to be delivering that content in, it really is based on something that is relevant, that viewers can identify with, and more importantly, that they can actually get something of value out of it. Otherwise, it's just entertainment for entertainment's sake, and I think it would be a misuse of a powerful media like television just to do mindless entertainment. Not that there's no space for it, but I think as a young democracy with so many challenges, we really have the responsibility of ensuring that all our content is useful and is empowering to our viewers. So as I said, it's daunting for me because sometimes I'm like, okay, are we going to go with this or that? And I realize at that moment that I'm actually making a decision on what people, 50 million people are going to watch and who am I really, you know. So it's I really respect the job. I love it. But I think I understand the responsibility that it comes with.
Well, there's a huge dynamic in terms of understanding your target audience and the people, what the appetite is, what people want to consume. And beyond looking at the educational aspect and providing knowledge, there's also addressing the dynamics that happen in real time in terms of news events and being able to incorporate that mix into the flow as well.
Mm. Well, absolutely. I mean, you've got to be on the pulse. You've got to have your ear on the ground. You've got to know what viewers are doing, what they are wanting to see on TV. But sometimes you've got to anticipate their needs as well, because I think that sometimes viewers don't always know that this is what they need until they see it. So that takes a lot of research, a lot of observing, a lot of reading, and just understanding the climate and what people are going through. So if you're not relevant and if you're not on social media and all of that, then, you know, you will lose a lot of viewers. So, and also, as we know, there's so many channels now. We're no longer the monopoly that we used to be. So we are competing for eyeballs. And it's really, really tough for the SABC as a public service broadcaster, because we've got that added responsibility. But I like to see it as a unique USP, because that's why I do what I do, because I want to feel that I'm actually contributing and I'm actually making some kind of impact in the lives of people.
Well, I think your ratings are testament to the fact that that impact is happening. What would you say is your greatest challenge in the role?
Wow, I think the greatest challenge is, you know, we live in a world where it's all about instant gratification. So while you may come up with a series that is hard-hitting and people enjoy, maybe in the first season it's like it does really well, and then you do a second season and audiences have moved on. You know, they kind of want something else, because somehow people get really bored quickly. So the challenge with television is that, unlike radio, it takes time to make this content. You know, for us to deliver a drama that's going to be on air maybe, let's say, this time next year, it needed to have been produced a year before, or at least start to prepare it. So whilst you may think that you're relevant in terms of your issues because you are producing it the year before and you're trying to forecast where things will be, sometimes it's really hard, because by the time you go on air, maybe the issue has dated or people have moved on or something else has come up. So for me, that's always a challenge, to say, how can we stay ahead of the game to ensure that relevance, because we need the time to create the content. But we balance it with it. Of course, that's just the drama. We've got other genres which are more immediate and more current, where you can actually talk about real issues in the moment. So I think if you look at the entire schedule and what we have to offer, I hope that viewers actually find something holistic and complete, and that they can resonate with most of the content that they see on SABC2.
But looking at speed to market as being an important issue, are you finding that the impact that society is having, that everything has got to be quicker, that there's almost this on-demand requirement, that your timelines are getting shorter, that production schedules are speeding up to try to stay more relevant?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also, just as the SABC, we're only like really starting to migrate in the digital space. You know, viewers don't watch TV the way that they used to watch it. I mean, before we'd tell people, okay, it's 7 o'clock, you must watch the news. You know, it's this time, you must do that. People don't consume content like that. News is around us 24/7. And by the time your 7 o'clock bulletin is on air, everybody knows what the headlines are and if they've moved on. So the digital space, although we're not in it fully, really allows for our content to be consumed at whatever time. Because the schedules, yes, you know, they're specific, but I think that we have to acknowledge that the viewing patterns have changed, and people actually want to dictate and be in charge of what they consume and at the time that they consume it. So it's also just that migration and changing of mindset, because we come from an analog space, and it's a challenge but an exciting one, because it just opens up so many other opportunities as well, and more direct conversations with the viewers. So, I mean, I love to watch the dramas that we put on air on Twitter, because people, as they watch, they, you know,
you've got the engagement.
Yes, they're
factor.
Tweeting and they're saying this character is this, or how can you do that? And you actually can get a real feedback at the same time. That excites me a lot.
Yeah. It's a much richer customer experience.
Absolutely.
By doing this dynamic, having the two-way dialogues and engagement patterns. Now, as we're a gender-based radio show, can you share with us some of the gender challenges that you've encountered during your career and how you've overcome them?
Wow, yes. I mean, I think it's an ongoing challenge, not only just in media. I think across many areas in South Africa, you know, being female, it just means that you have to work that much harder in proving yourself that you actually can be capable. I think for me as a media practitioner, some of the challenges is just kind of getting that regard and acknowledgement. And you see me, I'm quite petite. So the moment I walk in boardrooms full of men with ties, already it's like, you know, are you taking the minutes or, you know, who are you? And then you start speaking and then like some attention is given. And actually there, some of them will confess at the end of the meeting to say, wow, when you walked in, I just thought you were the, like, you know, administrator, but wow, I'm so impressed at your eloquence, at your knowledge, whatever. And as flattering as that may be, it's also quite annoying because how long must women continue to prove themselves that they are just as capable as our male counterparts? Also, just in the production industry, it's still very hugely male-dominated, especially, you know, behind cameras and they're like real important like director work and camera work and things like that. Although we have transformed quite a bit and I think we're going to in the right direction. But you still see, and it's also a racial issue as well, because it's a gender issue and it's a race issue. And of course, women will always be the last. So I try not to think about it. But it's always at the back of the mind that you always have to kind of prove yourself that you actually can do this all the time. And I long for the day where we don't have such conversations, where we are just treated as professionals and respected as professionals regardless of our gender.
It's about perceptions framing people's realities. And as you've said, when you walk into a boardroom, you, the woman that comes in, that there's a perception that you're not there in terms of your official capacity, that you're there as an administrator. But the more professional women that we get into the boardroom, the more role models, the more visible they become, not just from a woman's point of view, but also from a male perspective, that understanding the capabilities that you bring into the position. And whilst we're in the media space, there was a study done in 2015 by Genderlinks. And interestingly, what they found, and this is going across Southern Africa, was that the ratio of women to men studying media is significantly higher, so 64% to 36%. But despite this bias towards women, within the work environment, 40% of women account for media employees and 34% of media managers. But yet, and this comes into light with your role within the programming space, women's views and voices only represented 20% of news sources in Southern Africa, and that is actually lower than the global average of 24%. As head of programming, you choose what's aired. How do you ensure that content is gender balanced?
Well, as a woman myself, I will say that there's obviously a bias in me towards content that speaks and resonates with women and young people as well, because I think that's the responsibility that one has. It has to be a conscious decision. Otherwise, you just go with the status quo, you go with what is easier and things like that. So for me, it's about balance. On SABC2, for example, we have a woman's talk show. You know, it's deliberate. It's called Mutswako. It's been going on for many, many years. And it's there for a particular reason, because women, as you say, don't often get a platform to really, you know, express themselves and talk about their issues, obviously issues in relation to men as well. But it was a deliberate decision to say, let us have a talk show like that where women can be empowered by other women in positions just to discuss women's issues, whatever it is. So you have to be deliberate in your scheduling and programming strategy to say you will have shows like that. That doesn't mean that you won't have a man's show either, because, you know, you're broadcasting to all genders. But I think also even in terms of dramas, when we come up with content, you know, what are the issues that are being raised? You know, are we raising issues around women, around discrimination, around abuse and things? Because those are the issues that women face on a daily basis. And while the talk show like Motswako does that really well, I always find that dramas do even better because people are now just following a narrative.
They can relate to it.
And they're entertained and they can relate to the characters. But we've got all these subliminal messages because that is what is it has to be deliberate. And when those writers go there, you say, you know, we want a drama that's going to focus on A, B, C, D. And the more we do that, I think the more even men, when they watch this content, hopefully also question their own roles with regard to the treatment of women. And we understand it's a socialization thing, but what we need to do is to make these things conscious, because I feel that half of the time people just behave in general in an unconscious way and they perform roles because they expected to and they've never bothered to ask themselves, why do I do this? Why do I think like this?
It's habitual.
It's habitual.
And it's learned.
And that's why it's so dangerous, because it can continue for generations and generations. But if you... we can make people to actually reflect on their own behavior and their own contributions to stereotypes, then I think we're getting somewhere.
And I think that's another really important point about the media, is that it's influencing role, that it is ubiquitous, whether it is broadcast, whether it is paper-based, digital-based, it's omnipresent in people's lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
Today, we're talking to Jackie Shlongwane, who is the program manager for SABC2 Television.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chakachaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. Today, we're talking to Jackie Shlongwane, who is the program manager for SABC2 Television. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In the previous segment, Ms. Shlongwane explained some of the challenges that delve into her position. We specifically addressed the importance of presenting a balanced ratio of content, but with an emphasis in terms of pushing out content which is in the best interests of the public, with a particular strength on youth and women. We spoke about some of the gender programs, for instance, Motswako as a talk show, which is really delving into helping other women empower each other. Moving on to the next theme, there was a study done in 2015 by McKinsey and Lean In, so that's the initiative that Sheryl Sandberg of Facebook is involved with. And what it did was it looked at women in the workplace, in corporate America, arguably, and it indicates that female leadership is vitally important for organizations, for them to perform at the highest levels. But based on the slow progress over the last 3 years that the study measured, it would take 25 years to reach gender parity at senior vice president level, and more than 100 years in the C-suite.
It's crazy.
So women are underrepresented at all levels in the upper echelon, and they face significant barriers to advancement. So some of those barriers included that they would have fewer opportunities to advance because of their career. They would have fewer opportunities to advance because of their gender, that being a woman will make it harder for them to advance in the future, and that being a woman meant that they had personally missed out on an assignment or promotion just because of their gender. What do you think about this? And do you think that, I know that this problem is not unique to America, but how we can overcome issues like this?
It's crazy. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And one can't help but think that it's deliberate and it's an agenda that is being pushed forward. And I'm not really understanding why, because I think that, you know, women bring so much value to any company just because we are women and we are different from men in the way, maybe in a stereotypical way, that we probably nurturers and leaders, and we want things to work for the greater good. And I just don't understand it. Sometimes I reduce it to maybe as women we threaten men, and maybe we scare men, and maybe they feel that they'll cease to exist if we get given or we take charge of positions. And I just think it's crazy. And for me, it's really about socialization, because as much as it makes me mad, I also think I understand why. I think that women, as women and as mothers, we also play a huge role in perpetuating these stereotypes in terms of how we raise our children, you know, in terms of how we raise our boys and in terms of how we raise our girls. And as I said before, because this is largely an unconscious thing, because as a woman, you will kind of raise your children the way you were raised and the way society expects you to raise them, so you just follow through. So because it's unconscious, that's why it's going to take another 100 years. I really think we have to go back to the basics as women and as men, to really look at how we raise our children. Because if we don't start there and stop making those differences there, then we will continue like that. It's absolutely crazy, because it's also been proven where women take leadership, you know, it adds that value, it adds the diversity. It's a different way of leading, because I don't think that as women we ever want to replace men or we want to be like men.
It's got to complement.
It's got to be complementary, but somehow we just not get it. So, of course, it makes me mad, but I think that the responsible thing to do, because your question was, what do we do about it? It's really about what can we do as women, because we are part and parcel of the problem. And the problem is unconscious, because we just continue doing what we know. So, yes, it will take a very long time, but it's probably up to women to change it, because we've got that power. You know, men don't usually want to take care of kids when they're young. We're the ones who must take time off.
It's very influencing.
Yes,
role.
And we can influence. And so we need to realize that power and change how we raise our children, both boys and girls, and really establish that sense of respect for the other, regardless of gender, and make girls believe that they can do just as well, if not better, and vice versa. It's crazy, because when we are together and we do things together, things get better. But yeah, it's just crazy. But I choose to look. So I've got children myself, a girl and a boy, and I really make a concerted effort to, you know, when my boy doesn't want to, just puts the plate in the sink, I said, so who do you expect to now wash that dish for you? And he'll be like, I'm hungry, so you can't make your own food. Like, you know, so and vice versa with my girl. She plays soccer, she just embraces herself as a girl, but she does things that boys do. And that's just me. That's my little contribution, and I'm hoping that, you know, we can become more conscious as women all across the continent as we raise our children.
But there you're framing their perspective. So they will, and it's been proven countless times that how strong your roots are, your foundation, the impact that it has on your life going forwards. So you're framing that narrative for them, and that'll be what's the lens that they're looking out in the world and what they're expecting to come back to them. So you're right. If mothers all looked at socializing their children in this manner, instead of having stereotypical gender expectations,
yes,
then that would go a long way towards contributing to equality, which every single person can make a concerted effort towards.
Yeah, and it starts from way on when children are babies. I remember when I was pregnant with my kids, I didn't want to know what the gender was, because I wasn't really interested. So people were in a dilemma in terms of the clothes and the colors that I said, buy whatever, it doesn't matter. So if I get a boy and you've got blue and pink and yellow things, my boy will wear that, because it's just a color, and vice versa. So we put this pressure on ourselves, and we don't even interrogate why we do what we do. So, yeah.
Thanks for sharing your perspectives there. Now, one of the questions that I ask guests who have been on this program, who've all made tremendous achievements in their respective fields, is about some of the factors that they consider have been key drivers towards their success. So some people speak about perseverance, others talk about hard work or a particularly inspirational figure in their lives. Can you share with us what would you say have been some of the key factors to your success?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I think for me, passion has to be one of those things that you have to have in order to succeed. Because, as you know, there'll always be challenges, there'll always be difficulties, and it's easy to give up when you face challenges when you are not passionate about what you're doing. Of course, the qualifications are important. I think education is really, really key. And I think why education is key is not so much the content that is taught in the class, because that you forget. Let's face it, after 10 years, I don't think I could write my final year BA degree exam. But I think the value of education is really to broaden your mind and to broaden your perspective and to appreciate difference and diversity and different opinions. But it also gives you the time to reflect and analyze on things before you have an opinion or you say what you think, and that you can back up what you're saying. You're just not saying things because that's what you are thinking in the moment. And I think we lack that a lot, and we're having all these challenges because we just are not refined in our thinking and we don't take the time. And also the value of education makes you want to know more all the time. So while you can have your degree, you know that actually you don't know much if you look at the vast amount of knowledge that is out there. So it encourages you to constantly read and debate and, you know, just be curious about life, because that is how you grow. If you're not curious, if you don't ask questions, then you stagnate. Hard work, undoubtedly. You know, you gotta work hard because there's no shortcuts. But the value of hard work is that you get earned experience. Because if you don't work hard, then you don't gain the experience. And you can only gain experience if you work hard. But it's easier to work hard if you're passionate about what you're doing. If you see the value of what you're doing, if you see the impact and the difference that you've made. I'm a teacher by profession, so I'm really big on transformation and just kind of molding people and helping them to see their own potential and helping them to see that they can be the best that they can be and they can contribute to the broader society, because we are all here for one reason or another, and whatever that is. And it's a tragedy, I feel, where we've got millions of people with gifts and talents, but because they're poor, they are not educated, all they can think about is just how they're going to survive from one day to another. And as a society, we're all the poorer because all these people also have gifts and talents, but unfortunately are not able to even entertain and exercise them because they are worried about the most basic of things.
It's about realizing their purpose.
Yes, yes.
So from your perspective, we've got passion as a strong component. We've got education as a key area for self-development, empowerment, motivation, and a greater sense of purpose.
Yes.
To understand how communities are connected and how they can achieve.
Yes.
Their value.
Absolutely.
In society. Can you share with us who've been strong women in your life and why?
Well, I have to say my mom first. My mom, her name was Jane Hlongwane. She's late now. She was a very strong woman. She worked in the unions. She was a general secretary of the Steel Engineering and Allied Workers Union of South Africa. Very mindful. And she worked in that industry where it was just men.
Very
and
male.
She would have to go into these boardrooms, but she was so funny. She would go into the boardrooms with a knitting needle because she loved to knit, but she was tough. And she fought for workers, and it was during apartheid, so you can imagine. So she inspired me so much, and maybe that's why I'm the way that I am, I have to say. I mean, also my grandmother for other reasons as well. But I think in the workplace, I have to single out Yvonne Kame, who was my boss for many, many years. She's a dear friend of mine. She's like my mother. She's my mentor. And she taught me the value of self-discipline, self-respect, and belief in yourself. You know, she would always give me these huge projects to do, and I would like, I don't know where to start. And she said, I know you'll do it. And she always gave me that challenge, but was always there to support. She always had my back. And I'm forever grateful to her. She has retired now, but I'm still very, very close with her. And I try and do that for the women and the men that come after me, because I think in the workplace it can be quite a lonely and alienating place. And if you don't have the support, it can be quite a challenge. So I really, yeah, Yvonne is just an amazing woman. She's a motivator. She has inspired so many people. She's gone through so much trauma and challenges in her life from a health perspective, but she's now writing books and speaking across the world. She is just such an inspiration, and I continue to go to her or to call her when I'm like, oh, I don't know, what do I do? And I think that's important as a woman, that we do that for other women, because it's not always the case. So I'm very, very blessed, and I'm not the only one, because she's just that kind of person. She has just grown so many of us, and yeah, we love her dearly.
Well, that's a fantastic message of inspiration, and looking at it from point of view of these support networks, which you can call on in times of need, and also being able to regenerate and feed back into them. We are unfortunately running out of time. Can I please ask you, in closing our conversation today, if you can share a few words of inspiration, message of hope, which you'd like to impart to all women who are listening to us on the continent today?
Wow, message of hope. I think that we live in a most wonderful continent. I'm proud. I'm a proud Black African woman, and I just want us as Africans to really take charge of our destiny in terms of our communities, our families, and this continent. There's so much talent in this continent, but there's so many challenges equally, and I firmly believe that these challenges can only be overcome by us as Africans coming together and making this continent work. I am tired of us being the basket case of the world, the dark continent. We are the next frontier. We have everything in this continent. We are rich in culture. We are rich in history. We are rich in minerals. We have many educated people. Some are still in the continent, some live in other parts of the world. I just think that there needs to be that will and that political will that we actually make this continent great again. After all, we are the cradle of humankind, and there's a lot of hurt and pain, I know, but, you know, it's really up to us to change the situation around whatever field you find yourself in. You know, it has to be about rebuilding this continent. It has to be, you know, being great again. It has to be about changing the perceptions. But no one is going to do that for us except us as African people.
Thank you for that wonderful message, where we as Africans have to appreciate what we have, value ourselves and embrace our talent to overcome challenges, providing greater strength of unity and being able to contribute not just to building our society, but also to the world.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. This was lovely. I really had a great time here.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been talking to Ms. Jackie Shangwani, who is the program manager for SABC2.